I think
this paper?
It's one of the ones I emailed out.
Sent it around.
Yeah.
Tamar sent it around.
I think I just sent it out to the Chabura chain, right?
Did I? Yeah. That 98.
Yeah.
email.
Adam, do you get those emails, Adam? I think you should, right?
This chain is so infinitely long. I don't know what was sent when.
All right. I'll look for a recent one.
Like the last, I think it's the last one that was sent.
The way that Gmail works is either way, I have to scroll all the way to the bottom of this,
chain. Yeah, well, I think what's strange about his article is that, A, he phrases everything in terms of onus as punishments, which I think is a category mistake. Even if you go in for the, astrology of Mazel thing, you don't have to view it as punitive. And then second of all, what I don't like about it is that he paints this picture as if, like, look, the principles are so clear-cut, right? Onsim target certain victims, and all we do as Dayanim is identify the victim and, allow the loss to lie with him. But the problem is that, like, A, it's in all these cases, it's really...
Like blaming the victim. It's terrible.
Well, forget it, right. But in all these cases, it's very difficult to identify which party is the one being targeted. And I would say more than that, and this is like a classic... conservative versus like left liberal way of looking at things. Like, conservatives like to pretend that, we know where things are and we just got to make sure that the law is not interfering with it, right? So it's like, we all know that I make my income and my house is mine and we just got to keep the law and the government like out of my private space. And like the egalitarian liberal view is always, what makes things yours and what makes it your space is that there are certain rules and principles that create it as such, right? So you can't just have this, you can't pretend, it's not libertarian. And so I think you have something similar over here. The article makes it seem as if, we just own some hit people, and then we just recognize the victim as having to absorb the onus because he's the target of the punishment. But oftentimes, right, who the victim is or who's getting on whose side of the court the loss is falling in is a function of the legal rules of Onsim, Bailos, Hakna, Kinyanim. So it becomes a very complicated way of reconstructing it. All right. You guys are really funny in the chat. I saw that. Good. All right. Let's get to our main event, unless anybody else. Gabe, you wanted to share some of your thoughts, or we should get to our discussion here. Please. Whoops. All right, I found the right thing.
No cozy. What's it called? Cozy cabins by the.
Cozy cabin by the water.
That's right. Well, it's coming up. That's August, though. We got
this
the
new picture.
I got the cozy cabin, by the way. So.
Please send the details around. That's where the rest of us can book.
I'll circulate them. Okay. So I wanted to just add one other Gemara to our discussion. Just again, the Gemara in Kuf Gimel. I mentioned the Mishnah. I just didn't mention the Gemara over there. The Mishnah talked about you share crop a field and then the water source dries up. You generally don't get a discount. But the Gemara there says, Hechidami, Ilema diyavash nahara rabba, if like a major river that was the source of the water dried up, amai eina menachalo min chikuro. Then it sounds like really you should get a discount on the sharecropper on the rent. Name alay makas medinahi, right? And it sounds like the basis for getting this discount is the fact that it's a makas medina. So this is the second place where the Gemara seems to suggest that makas medina is a reason for the tenant to get a discount. So if it's a yavesh nahara rabba, some big river dried up, and that prevents you from being able to water your field or from having a crop yield, then if it's a makas medina, you should get a discount. Okay. Cole, you want me to zoom in?
Yeah.
Yeah, let me just Okay, I'll zoom in a little more. All right. Okay. Now, I wanted to, that's just one important point. I want to, again, come back to Gabe's diak from last time. Been thinking about this over the last 2 days a little bit. On the Gemara in Kuf Vav, I believe that was the Sigya. Let me just go back. Yeah. The Gemara on Kuf Vav on Mebez, when it talked about, yes. Here. The Gemara on Kuf Vav on Mebez, when it talked about Nahar Malka Saba drying up, the Gemara said, it's uncommon for this river to dry up. It's a Makas Medina, so the tenant should get a discount. Zil Nachila, give him a discount. And, you know, it just struck me here, as Gabe was saying, you know, what's the relationship between the fact that this river doesn't usually dry up and it being called a Makas Medina? In Rashi, it sounded like there are two separate principles. But I was wondering if this gets to the point, kind of what Gabe was getting at last time and what Cole was interested in last time, that maybe part of something being a Makas Medina is that it's really so out of the blue, it's just so it's unforeseen by both parties. It wasn't something that either party expected to happen. It's such a remote kind of accident that it's a reason for holding neither party liable. So it's like when their things are foreseeable in some way or they happen every now and then the standard rules go into effect and we have to figure out who should have foreseen it, maybe both of them, maybe neither of them, etc. But if something is so extraordinary, it's like really low of a demiskar, maybe that's part of what makes something a Makas Medina. And I think you might suggest that that itself would be a reason to suspend the contract because, you know, this is like the condition, the contract itself assumes normal operating conditions. And if something so out of whack occurs, then it's like the basis for the agreement is no longer applicable. I think Cole last time was saying like the contract was made for a world in which normal things govern, normal rules govern, or normal events occur. But if like we now inhabit a world that's so vastly different, then there just has to be like a reset to the agreement itself. And maybe that's part of what makes something a Makas Medina. So I think, you know, this is a little contrary to Rashi's reading of the Sugya, but you do, it may be a clue to that idea of like frustration of purpose. Like, almost like an implicit term of this agreement is that we're living in the same world, and once our world changes, then the commitments, the duties of the contract could be vitiated or released in some way. Maybe this is a little bit of what the Ravid's getting at. The Ravid here says in the Shita Mekubetzes, Mashma mehacha di avid dimistaker. It sounds from this Gemara that if the river sometimes dries up, afagav dekulu laki behedya lo menachile. Right? It sounds like a necessary condition of your getting this discount is that it's totally uncommon for the river to dry up. My taima, da'le dide ramya milsa la'asnuye. Mekim de la'asniyu de'efzera nafshe. Because if this sometimes happens, then you have a duty to make provisions about it, right? And one party is going to lose for failing to make those provisions. The implication here is that if it's such an uncommon kind of thing, it's a really low avid demiskar, you know, it's like this is a different, almost like a different, you'd have to imagine a different world to imagine this contingency, then maybe that's part of what makes it a Makas Medina. I'm not sure exactly in the reading of the Ravid, but I wanted to put that suggestion out there. Yeah, let me see one more point, then I'll take your comment, Cole. The Chazon Ish in Bava Kamma Simen Chaf Gimel, Sif Katan Yud. We saw this Chazon Ish in a different context. This is where he spoke about the Bayis Shenafal, why the Baal Bayis is not always, why even though we say, Schiris Liyome Memkarhi, the Baal HaBayis is the one who loses the rest of the rent if in the case where the house falls. And the Chazanish was struggling with that, and he drew an analogy to Makas Medina. He says, "V'chein yesh le'estapek b'haditznan l'kaman kavhei mebeiz, and Makas Medina hi menachalo min chichuro, de yesh lomar d'chashiv kitznai." Chazanish is the first to say this, that Makas Medina is like an implicit condition, that, you know, if the world changes, all bets are off. The commitments of the agreement are off. So I think it's a nice idea. It's interesting. I think there are two ways to conceptualize this. One is to say that we're really viewing it as an implicit Tanai, that if things get out of whack, then the terms of the agreement are suspended. It like literally is just an implicit Tanai. Another way of thinking about it is that not to view the Makas Medina as an implicit Tanai, but almost that the conditions of this contract are an implicit Tanai, right? We implicitly assume normal conditions when we enter into this. And so there's a background assumption about the agreement. Once you take away that background assumption, then the contractual obligations are terminated. Now, I don't think there's much of a difference between those two, because they're both implicit conditions. Just one is imagining if this contingency occurs, then the agreements are suspended. And the other way thinks that we're imagining that these conditions only exist under certain conditions. But I think the point here is the same, that there's some implicit Tanai either about when the contract is valid or about when it becomes invalid. Now the Chazanish has a second daya. He says, V'efshar, and this is also within the Makas Medina point, V'efshar d'chashiv kehiskir lo davar shelo hayelo. And the Chazanish made this point elsewhere, that maybe we view this as if the renter tried to rent a property, the landlord tried to lease out a property that he didn't have. We saw the Chazanish try to push this idea elsewhere. For some reason, it's only under conditions of Makas Medina that we'd view the Baal HaSada as not having a field that was produce worthy. If it's a local ones, the second idea here wants to argue maybe the basis for the Makas Medina discount or the suspension of the duty to pay is because the Baal HaBayis didn't sell you a field that was worthy of yielding produce in this year. And the reason why we don't apply that idea when it's a local ones is because then we're willing to say that it's mazalo shel chocher. So I don't really understand the logic of the second answer, but it would be another way of understanding Makas Medina. I think the first answer of Chashiv Kitznai is really straightforward and quite simple. We have some comments here. Adam, comment. You're muted.
Adam, go ahead.
I can't be doing this thing where my cursor is in a box that's typing in, so I hit the space bar and just does lots of spaces. It doesn't unmute me. But from the Chazanish's perspective, it seems like the contract should be just broken. Rather, but like in general, the sugya sort of has like certain technical erachim that's mentioned. That this idea, like, you know, olam min haminyan.
Yeah.
And we just don't count this as part of the contract. The contract is still exists. We have to take away the value that this period of time or that this portion of the property would give you.
It's interesting. I have to think how that plays out exactly. You're right that basically, I think you're right to point out that there's more. Sometimes there appears to be more than just. Are the obligations still binding or not, right? I think the Chazanish's formulation would make the most sense if all we were talking about here is, are the obligations to pay, to provide the house, etc., still in force? And he said the Tanai is that they're not in force under certain conditions. And you're pointing out sometimes we'll have more complicated questions and it's not clear how this Chazanish principle would apply to them. Right, Adam?
Yeah. And like also additionally, in terms of like the idea of it being something that's unusual, it seems that it's not necessarily required that the event that's going to occur is unusual, but usually when you're creating a contract,
and you know it's a piece of land that theoretically can flood here and there, you're implicitly already paying less money for that. So yeah. Once it does happen, so okay, it happened, now you pay the money you would have paid for a field that had the type of flooding. So it's similar to the, you know, aluminum media type thing.
Yeah. Cole, you had a comment, follow up, or Cole, someone else had a follow up comment?
Yeah. I had a thought. It's not about the Chazanish, but it's about this. It's about rivers. In the regular river case that we saw about 2 minutes ago, equal information, the pollen bear, the loss.
Yes.
Right?
Correct.
Why is that?
Because the idea was that it's unusual to be entitled to payment for not doing anything. And so right. when the contract is entered into, if they want to be paid for not doing work, they have a duty to make that specification at the outset.
Right. So I think a good theory, so it's true that that case is the closest case to this. Some force majeure where, forget Stamzo, some force majeure where there is no condition made in advance. In the case where, in the regular flood case, the workers bear the loss, in this case, they get relief. I think the reason, and the only difference between the two cases, not the frequency of the river overflowing, that doesn't matter. I think the difference between the two cases is the distribution versus the localization of the loss. I think that sounds right. In the case we saw a month or two ago, it's just this guy's field.
Right.
In this case, it's a deluge. So I think one reason why, and the halachic difference between the cases is that here the bullim get relief, there they bear the loss. I think the difference has to depend on the fact that the workers in the case of the local flood had other options of employment that they forewent voluntarily. Whereas here, there's no way for them to make up the loss for themselves. Meaning that here they bear the loss, absolutely, in the same way as the Balabayas. There, they are equal victims of circumstance, if you want to put it that way.
Yeah.
In the case where there's a local flood, they could have worked in anybody else's
field. You're raising a very important point. I'm not sure if it works out the right way in this discussion. But you'll see a lot of some poskim. There's a I see the point. I think I'm not sure it works out the right way here because, I'll explain why I'm not sure it works out the right way in this context. But I think the general principle that you're raising is right. Some poskim appear to think of the significance of Makas Medina in your counterfactual way, right? In a normal case, the landlord, if you would have just rented the property out to somebody else. But in a Makas Medina, he wouldn't have found any clients to rent it out to. And same with the Poalim, right, Cole?
Yeah.
So you'll see that. So there is a view that thinks that is the significant, or at least one of the significant features of Makas Medina. Let's see how they formulate it, and then we'll come back to your point.
All right. You don't agree with it?
I do. I think there's definitely some merit to it, for sure. I think it's a bit of an open question whether what's more significant about Makas Medina. Is it the idea that there's equal mazel, neither party's at fault, neither party is the locus of the onus, or is it more of this counterfactually, you would be stuck at a loss anyway, and so...
I'm trying to explain the first idea the second. I'm trying to cash out the loss modally.
Right.
That's the, that's, yeah.
I think you're right to say that one way of trying, you might even think that that's a way of locating the onus.
Yeah. Right? Exactly. Yeah. That's the idea.
The idea is that no matter what you would have done, this onus would have hit your field. And so you balabayas have to get, you get stuck with it, right? It has nothing to do with
object. And by the way, and the flip is it, and the just the inverse of that makes good sense. If you want to be, if you're going to be taking a risk, say by working this guy's field as opposed to that guy's field, like it's your job to protect yourself. So here the idea is nothing you could have done could have, because the it was a deluge in a local.
Right.
Okay, anyway, we'll see.
Right. Yeah. Gabe, did you want to say something? Gabe and Yair?
Nothing insightful. I just wanted to ask you if you were to flesh out the difference between like a Stam case of onus and a Makas Medina case of onus, right, in the reading you presented earlier. So you said in the Makas Medina case of onus that the contract is terminated or sort of like undermined. What is the impact on the contract in a Stam case of onus?
Yeah.
The contract like ceases to function but still exists in some way. Is the onus a payout of the contract? Whereas in Makas Medina, the contract is sort of annulled in some way?
Yeah, good question. Yeah, I think the way you know, in some of the cases, it sounds very much like this is just the payout under the terms of the agreement, right? So, you know, if there's a haknas aguf or something like that, then the remedy here is to apply the rules of losses under the agreement. Schiras is mechira liyome, so, you know, the sale is valid and keep paying rent, you know, something like that. That's different from, I think, what's going on in Makas Medina, where we're saying that whatever agreement was made did not contemplate these kinds of circumstances. So we like rescind the binding agreement. Does that make sense, Gabe?
Yeah, I like it. And I think that's probably what the Chazon Ish is pointing at in both of the second presentation. He's also using sort of post facto information to retroactively cancel the contract from the beginning in a sort of like mekach talos like mechanism.
Right, like both of those are. Iglai Milsa, he didn't have anything to sell you.
Exactly. So each of those is cutting out the contract before it even began.
It's interesting. I like that. I like that interpretation. I have to think conceptually a little more about the relationship between these two ideas. But I think you're right that maybe that's a good way of putting it. I mean, the relationship between the idea of like what's considered a payout under the terms and what's considered a rescission of the, you know, the very thing. Good. Let's talk a little bit we have Yair, you had a hand?
Yeah, I did, but I'm actually going to duck out now, so. Yeah.
You can get in quickly before you have to duck out. I mean, unless you need 6 minutes of hachana for neoconservative thought.
Fine. I'll say what I want to push back on, I guess.
If people wait 6 hours between Fleishos and Milchix, you know, achas kama v'kama, between Torah and Tikva.
I guess maybe I'm misunderstanding Cole's formulation about like the responsibility in the context of a contract to like accommodate for some onsim but not other onsim, because some onsim are, I don't know, maybe I'm missing something. Maybe Cole could just try to reformulate what his contention was.
I think I understand it myself, a little bit of work, but the idea is that each party, when it enters an agreement, assumes certain risks. Given some basic rules, like we're going to pay you for work that you do, but not be work that you don't do, and that sort of thing. Each party assumes certain risks that it's going to get, that it meaning that that party is going to get, you know, stuck up a creek without a paddle if something happens. It's that party's responsibility to account for the risk by making a condition or suffer the consequences. The point I was making was that if you look at the case in the Gemara closest to this case of kind of the global, the regional plague as opposed to the very local, you know, river overflowing and interfering with the field work. So I think that one reason why in the case where it's just the river overflowing into the field and the pollen can't work, why the workers would bear the loss is that they have other options and they had other options for work, namely everybody else's field. They made a choice to avail themselves of this guy's field. It's their responsibility to account for the risk that something might happen to this guy's field. If something happens to this guy's field, de facto, he's going to, you know, lose whatever the value of the field is. But the work to be done is the contribution of the poelim. If they're unable to make that contribution, they won't get paid. What I'm saying is that the Makas Medina case might be a concession to the inability of the poelim to find other work. Meaning, it's not true that the poelim, in the case where there was a Makas Medina, it's not true that the poelim took on an unreasonable risk and didn't account for it. There was nothing they could have done.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll see. I think we're going to see a formulation along those lines later. But Yair, did you want to follow up, or?
Yeah, I'm not sure that kind of explanatory scheme is going to. First of all, I'm not sure if it is compelling to me in general. Like, we talk about what they should have done. Assuming probabilities aren't playing into it, and the category of the onus isn't playing into it, then what they should have done doesn't seem to be as relevant as it might be for the Rivens. Conception, for example.
Yeah, so in these contract cases, like they'll, you know, the poskim will use, you know, like, or the Gemara will use like afsidis nafshe or something like that. You know, it's your own fault or something like that. So I don't really know what that means. It's like weird.
Here's the Machane Ephraim has this formulation I was thinking of. Look at the Machane Ephraim here in Sechira Simin Vav. The way he conceptualized Makas Medina. So he comes at it a little bit through that Sugya Vangaria that we saw, and he says, well, imagine that there's... What's that?
Overflowing in the field.
Angaria is the requisitioning. Remember, the government requisitioning of private property?
Oh.
So he says, L'aniya zaitin yurikim, d'chol shem mechapsin v'batim, right? If the governments are going house to house to take away usable donkeys... Hareza Makas Medina, v'chol heicha dehave Makas Medina have pseida demaskir, she'afilu lo haya sochre ze, haisa nilkachas, she'kein mechapsin below kin kolak chamorim. So he defines Makas Medina in terms of the counterfactual, right? Even had he not rented it to this fellow, and rented it to somebody else, it still would have been taken. So we view it as affecting the true owner, the maskir, because no matter to whom he leased it, he would have suffered some sort of loss. Val benidon didan de lo nilkacha ki im bayezu bilvad, ki even de lo have a makas medina, ika lemeimar de mazale de socher garam de efshar she im lo haisa schura etzlo, lo haisa nilkachas. I think that's thinking very much along the lines that Cole was just suggesting, right?
Yeah.
No, because this is just making
clear. I think this is true. I don't quite know why it should be true, though. I'm very sketchy on the theory behind this. But I do think something like this has to be correct.
Right. No, so I think that the Machane Ephraim is appealing to some notion of fault, I think, in a much more conventional sense. Whatever mazel means, and we've spoken about mazel, I think, ad nauseum at this point. Whatever mazel means, you know, what...
Some say that any talk about mazel is talk ad nauseum about mazel.
One might say so, but I'm more sympathetic to it than I think you were initially. But in any case, you know, whatever it means that mazel is some kind of fault, some kind of actual causation, he actually entertains the possibility that if you hadn't rented it, nothing bad would have happened to it. And once it's Magus Medina, then, you know, Hashkacha Pratis is no longer at play. It's Hashkacha Klolis. And so, you know, whatever the rules are for the star's impact on our society, it's different than the rules for the star's impact on me. That's the, I think, the simplest and maybe the only way to explain the why to Cole's once.
Wow.
But now my neocon friend is
going to be... To borrow from T.S. Eliot, I mean, you're going out here with a bang, not with a whimper, right? I mean, you threw out the kochavim and the mazalos and hashkacha klalis and pratis, and with that, you bid us adieu. To
something only slightly less sensible.
All right, Yair, we'll see you later.
Have a good job,
guys. Yeah, bye. Adam, you have a hand?
Yeah, I didn't fully read Refleshman or read him whatsoever. But I mean, like based on this, I mean, it would seem to sort of bolster his view. I mean, once you're making the assumption that it's not something truly, I guess, physical, but something more metaphysical, and you take that especially in relation to the Gemara Kavav, I mean, you have to explain it by something.
Okay, but I would just push back and say, the Machane Ephraim's use of mazel here is quite docile. I mean, all he says is that there's no reason to attribute the loss to anything specially associated with the renter when it's a Makas Medina. But absent a Makas Medina, there's at least an argument to say that the onus was user-specific, right? And I don't think it has to mean that, you know, his stars were getting retribution. It could just mean that the guy forgot to oil the vehicle, right? Or the guy didn't plow the field the right way, or he forgot to put up a scarecrow, whatever it is, right? I mean...
How did you think of Aaron Kovov?
That we discussed on Tuesday? I think
maybe it's not really discussed on Tuesday, but the one about, like, the direction the wind blasts and which fields are hit.
Yeah, I think that's also a way of identifying whether there could be socher specific causes to the... So, like, look, if every single one of the landlord's fields gets infected with mice, maybe it's because, like, he forgot to... He, like, is doing something wrong with his fields, right? Maybe he, like, wears the wrong kind of deodorant or something. I'm saying you don't have to automatically connect Mazzello claims to theological issues. I think they're just a way of trying to assign who's responsible, or and it doesn't have to be theological responsibility. That's all.
Well, I mean, not particularly that good, but I mean, Gemara, let's say the wind blast only hit from the right side of the fields. Only west fields are, you know, dried up. So the Gemara is Masopak, whether or not that should be considered Makam Medina or not.
Right.
So if that's your understanding of it, and you're saying, well, it will only affect this guy, but it won't affect the other guy, and how else do you explain it? It's clearly not that the person did. Every field in the west side of the country was hit by it, but that's only considered half of Medina, so it doesn't have a true din of Makam Medina.
Well, I think that could just be like a vagueness question, right? What's the point at which we'll say that the onus would have happened anyway because it's a Makas Medina? So I think you're going to have to draw the line somewhere, and you know, it could just be that Gemara's trying to figure out where to draw it. But that, I don't think it necessarily shows... I don't think it points to theology. But
I think it points to maybe the Gemara itself is sort of having this tension between, do we have to take a theological approach to this, or are we taking a true physical approach to it?
Yeah. Possibly. Yeah, I mean, that could be... I'm open to that reading of the Gemara. Interesting if you found somebody, you know, who suggested that other than, you know, Reuven Walter's father.
Yeah, that's a lot of the feel to it. Like, up until you get to the Teiku, it feels like that's what the Gemara is playing with.
Yeah, that's interesting. That's an interesting idea. Okay, I want to talk a little now about the idea that we saw in the Ravan and the application of the Sma that Gabe very nicely gave us an overview of last Chavura. So just to walk us through the Ravan again, the Ravan in Simen Tzadiches, he had this case of Makas Medina, and it sounded like he wanted to say the general rule is to split the loss. He said, Miu Menachem in Chichuro Katani Velo Kol Chichuro Tkimen Demakas Medina Al Shneim Hava Hefzin Vze Yafzin Mechta Vze Yafzin Mechta Hachanami Shimon Yashlim LeRuven Machzis Hayamim Shayachotin Beisav Ruven Yafzin Hamutar. Notice, I don't think there's anything deep about Mazel here. All he's telling us is that the rule for Makas Medina is that it's Al Shneim Hava Hefzin. Right, they share the loss equally, and therefore you split it. And then he says, V'chi tema, blah, 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 he cites the Gemara. And he says, maybe you want to read Menachelo Menchichuro to mean that, not that he gets a discount, but that he doesn't have to pay rent at all. He says, Ibra lo matzes amres hachi, de makas medina lahai de shneim hu. It's really interesting. At this point, he's entertaining that even if when you read the Gemara in Kuf Vav, you want to read that case of the Chocher as saying that the tenant is off the hook entirely from rent, he says, well, that's just because in that case, the Makas Medina hit the Baal HaBayis's field more than it hit the tenant's work. But in this case, of where everyone ran away from the city, he says, the Makas Medina was lahai de shneim hu. Lefichach hehefzid al shneim. We view the hefzid in this case of the Schiras Batim as applying to both parties equally. So I think this is just like a really nice statement of Makas Medina being a shared loss, and the rule is yachloku with respect to the hefzid, because that's what a Makas Medina is. It's something that hits both parties evenly. Here too, in the next formulation, he says, and even if you want to say in the Gemara on Kuf Vav, the tenant shouldn't have to pay at all, here the tenant should have to lose half. Dehasam haisa kol hamaka al hasada shel machir sharei nishtafa ruba debaga velo haisa hamaka al achocher aval hacha ikal memar gezeras hamaka al shneim haisa al habatim lios bedudim v'al hanashim lios golim. So he thinks that there should be some split of the loss. And then here again, Cole, this might be getting at your point. The O Dehasam in the sharecropper case, Matzi Amar Chocher Lamachker, Ilu Havis Kamach, O Beyad Chocher Acher, Milo Mishtadfa. Right? The tenant could say to the landlord and say, you should lose. Because no matter who you lease the property out to, there would have been this flood. Aval hachi matzi amar masker lesocher ilu lo sacharta besi hashema haya socher acher meotzen shalonigs are aleim galus. Shaharei nishu miyat hakol bibayis velo hayisi nifsad klum. V'kivan de'ikal lesafuke v'hachi yachlogu. He's saying there could be this imaginary conversation here where if the tenant could turn to the landlord and say, no matter who, which client you had, you would have suffered a loss, then the landlord should bear the loss. But if the landlord could respond and say, hey, it's really conceivable that some of my tenants would not have had to flee town, then the tenant should have to share in the loss with the landlord. And I think this gets to Cole's idea about part of what we're looking for in a Makas Medina is to see counterfactually, was the loss socher specific, or was it really universal to any socher who would have used the house? Cole, you wanted
no.
to?
No. That's it's interesting. Maybe this comes to the same thing. I was the way I was putting it was like socher specific. I was thinking about it from the perspective of the Poel, there are two ways you could view this. One way you could view it is that the, whoever it is, the Poel or the Baal HaBayis could say, you could attack this from one of two angles. you could say that the person who would be on top, okay, in the local case, is without a way to pin the loss on the other, because no matter who he rented it out, the same thing would have happened. But that doesn't strike me as correct, because it's not true. This is a Schiris case, right?
Yeah, Schiris Batim.
Right. So, but that's not the right way to think about it, because the Makas Medina isn't on all Polim, it isn't on all people. It's on all places, meaning the imaginary conversation here is that the owner of the house is, you know, the renter comes to the owner of the house and says, you know, I should have to bear the loss for this. No matter who you rented it out to, the same thing would have happened. Well, that's true. Maybe that gets the variable wrong. Don't you see? Because the Makas Medina, the thing that's giving the socher the exemption, the relief, it's not that it touched all renters, it's that it touched all houses. Like all the houses burned down, all the donkeys were stolen, all the fields were flooded. So it's not gonna, it puts the emphasis on the wrong side of the equation. Yeah, I don't think the answer will be gotten to by leveling down the party that was at an advantage in the other case. It's going to be gotten by leveling up the person who now gets relief, the poel, the socher, or the dog. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
Seems to get the parameter wrong.
The argument here seems to, it's you're saying, who cares that no matter who you would have rented it to, the tenant would have had to run away, right? Why is that the right way of thinking about it? I wonder.
It's that every house, it's that I, as the renter, didn't have another option,
right?
That I should be, and there, which gets the variable exactly, and the reason why it has to be that is the reason why it has to be, like, you know, a renter-centered rather than balabaya-centered, is that in the case where the renter has to bear the loss, what we're doing is we're looking at him and saying, you know, like, you had a way out of this. You chose not to take, and you didn't plan accordingly. So it's got to be that we're saying to him, you didn't have a way to avoid this. We have to be leveling up the renter, not leveling down the balabaya.
Yeah.
That has to be...
Well, it could be implicitly that's what's happening here. What if you
thought... It comes to the same thing, but it gets the variable exactly wrong. Because the Makas Medina is on the surrounding area. It's not on the people.
Well, that's what the sense you get from this Ravan is that they're trying to, like, locate, right, the party that's affected. And the tenant's saying, look, this is really a Batim Maka. Because
where's he saying that?
So this is the response. Sorry, the Matzi Amar Chocher LeMachir Ilu Havis Kamach.
The Chocher is the renter,
the tenant. Yeah, and the Machir is the landlord. Ilu Havis Kamach Obiad Chocher Acher Mila Mishtadfa. Right, no matter who your tenant was, the field would have been destroyed. So
yeah, that's the wrong response.
Right, but the Ravan's saying that's a reason to make the landlord absorb the loss in full. In this Hasamatsi Amar answer, right? The fact that counterfactually the landlord would have been stuck with some sort of onus is a reason to see the onus as inhering in him.
But, yeah, that's not a good. That's like, you know what that is? That's too much of the mazel garam. That's the problem with the mazel garam analysis.
Right. Maybe
that it leads to say something like that. Like,
yeah.
If lightning struck, say the lightning struck the house. That's the reason why the house burned down. That's not a Makas Medina. That's a local thing. So, like, he, that's my analysis says, my analysis gets that case right. This analysis gets that case wrong, because it's not true, but unless you want to appeal to Mazel, which is ridiculous. But like, it seems that no matter who rented the house, lightning would have struck. Those aren't related.
No, so that's the thing we'll say, that like, oh, especially if Schiros is Mechira Liome, if lightning only hit the house, it was hitting the tenant. Right? It's the tenant's house during the term. But if lightning hit the whole city, then we'll say, oh, the lightning would have struck this house no matter which tenant was here, and that's a Baal Bayis hefsid. That's the Ravan's analysis, right?
Yeah, but that's wrong. Sorry, that's got to be wrong. That gets it completely backwards. Don't you see? Those are unrelated factors.
It's a kind of avodah zarah.
Well, I wouldn't go that. I'm not accusing the Ravan of like having a frum.
Yeah.
Do you agree that what I'm saying kind of has to, something like what I'm saying is like, you know, it's the first step?
Maybe. I don't find this Ravan so difficult. I mean, I definitely like the first, I think that first half is the cleanest, where he just, the first half is the cleanest, just where he says, look, it's a Makas Medina Shneim of a Hefsid. Even when he gets...
That names the problem. It doesn't solve it.
Right. Anybody have thoughts on Cole's...
Labels a problem rather than solving it. Great Davidsonian phrase.
Anybody want to help Cole here, or should we move on to the Tshuvas Maram?
I'm ready to finish Torah defending my view. I think I'm so obviously correct. And if nobody said, if everybody has it on the wrong factor, that's remarkable.
Yeah. Donnie, you wanted to help Cole out, or you're...
I'm not sure how to respond. I'm not really sure what the issue is, actually, but like,
what do you mean you don't know what the issue is? You don't know what I'm getting?
Maybe I lost the train of thought earlier, but I'm not really sure what you're...
Here's the idea. Okay. You rent a house. Mm-hmm. Okay. There are two, I'll give the Ravan's theory. I'll give my theory. You rent a house. Okay. All the houses in the neighborhood burn down. Now, what the Ravan wants to say is that if it had been only this house that burned down, renter, that's your fault. Or your mazel, or whatever it is. Okay? If all the houses...
It's your issue.
Yeah, it's your issue. Okay. It's your issue. You're lost to them. Right? But now imagine that all the houses in the neighborhood burned down. So there, what the Ravan would say is, the Ravan would like whisper in the renter's ear, you have a response now. It's not your issue. Any renter that he rented it to would have suffered the same loss.
Yeah.
So all the houses in the city burned down. Okay. What I'm saying is that gets so what's the Ravan done in the case where it's just the one house that burns down? The Baal Bayis is on top. The Baal Bayis can say to the renter, your issue. What the Ravan is saying is to the renter, what you should say is the Baal Bayis, no matter what, would have borne the loss.
Mm-hmm.
That's the response of the Ravan. What I'm saying is that gets the parameter incorrect. It's a mismatch for the following reason. What changes between the case where it's just the one house that burns down and where all the houses burn down? That the property's destroyed. The response that the Ravan, that all the properties destroyed, meaning there were no other houses to rent, the response that the Ravan wants the renter to meet to the Baal Bayis doesn't get that factor right. He's talking about something else, namely that whatever renter you would have rented this out to, the house would have burned down. because all the houses burned down. That's not an inference. That doesn't follow. It gets the factor wrong. What happened wasn't that all the renters got trafed. It's that all the houses burned down. And if all the houses burned down, then the operative principle here is not that no matter what renter you would have gotten stuck with would have been a bad renter. It's that the renter didn't have, and I have to figure out, like, what's the cash value of this? The renter didn't have another option. Whereas normally he would have had another option, another house, but all the houses burned down. And he gets relief as a result of that, of the breadth of the force majeure, of the Makas Medina. That's the point I'm making. I think the Ravan is mismatched. There's carve the case at the joints.
Well, I think it sounds like you're advancing two separate theories, right? I mean, he's thinking the relevant counterfactual is what would have happened with a different tenant. And right. Cole, you're thinking the relevant counterfactual is could this tenant have found a different home to rent, right?
That might be a nafka meetup, by the way, between coronavirus and an earthquake.
Maybe. Yeah. But I do think what he's trying to do is he's trying to figure out al mi hava hahefsed, right? In this almost like target of the onus way. And I don't think it's problematic in and of itself to use his counterfactual as a way of determining whether it's like house specific or tenant specific.
Explains the wrong thing.
You're picking arbitrarily which one?
No, I'm not. I'm not picking arbitrarily.
That's what I didn't understand in the beginning. Why is the rent?
I have a question. What's the thing that happens to change the case? An earthquake, as opposed to lightning striking. All the houses get destroyed, as opposed to one house getting destroyed. The Ravan wants to say, though, that the legal difference between the two cases, that's the empirical difference. The Ravan wants to say that the legal difference between the two cases, though, depends on the availability of other renters.
Yeah, he's taking a Balabai approach. You're taking
Right. Well, I have a question. Yeah. Why? That's not the right factor. The reason why the renter bore the loss in the first case is explained just as well by the same thing.
You're saying just as well.
It hasn't accounted for the change. The Ravan hasn't told me anything new. It's a mismatch of explanation to things to explain. I'll write this up. Don't worry about it.
I hear what you're saying. I'm not convinced just because I still think it's arbitrary.
Okay, the truth sometimes takes a while.
I could see making your counterfactual matching it correctly, but I could also see what the Ravan's doing.
I'll send an email. Don't worry.
I want to briefly discuss two related tshuvos. So there's this tshuva with Maharami Rutenberg in Tfus Prague, Simon Shin Pei Ches, where he cites this Ravan, Kizimitzafnas Paneach Psak Halacha Kasher Timsa Sham. That's a nod to the Ravan. Quotes the exact same case, right? Din al Ruvein Shesachar Bayis Mishimin LeBeishanim. The Hiktim Vinasano Ashar Shal Beishanim, Vesochosan Beishanim, Barcha Yehudimina Ir, Nepikoach Nafsham, Barach Gamhu, Vinyachabayas Rekam, Vyachaka Chazru, Vagamhu Chazar, Rotze Shishalim Lo Shimon, Mashi Haya Chutmi Beso, Mishimon Meshiv, Besi Hayel Fanecha, Vyata Barach Deveni Mishalim Lacha. Same narrative as we saw in the Ravan. And the Maram only quotes the last consideration of the Ravan, which is interesting. It's Nirbeinai Tainas Ruvein Tainabura. Lefisha Makas Medina, he Ruvain should get a discount because it's a Makas Medina. Afal Pichein Yachloku HaHefsid. Notice, here, he only cites the part that thinks that in principle Ruvain should get a full discount. But nevertheless, they split the loss. Chatzi Mashesho Chutzmi Beso. Why? Shema Yehudi Acher Shelo Nigzar Alav Haya Socher Habayis. Sharei Miyot HaKol Nishar. So here, this is just like an interesting way of reading the Ravan. I don't think it's the right way of reading the Ravan at all. The way I understand the Ravan is that he's really operating under his first principle. The Ravan himself is saying, look, the hefsid is al shnehem in Amakas Medina. And that's why they split the loss whenever the onas targets both of them. In the Ravan himself, he's addressing, he makes this argument just to counter a possible reading of, to offer a way of distinguishing between Kufvav and his case. He's saying, even if you want to say in Kufvav, the sharecropper gets a full discount, over here, the sharecropper splits the loss because the Balabais can say that the onus also hit you because maybe a different renter would have been happy to stay in the property. In the Maram's version of it, there seems to be a very different principle at work. It sounds almost like it's a conflict between the principle of Makas Medina, which would give the renter a full discount, and this idea that the renter is in default. And so as a compromise between those two principles, we get a yachloku. Right? So I think if you read this Tshuva de Maram carefully, you get the sense that, look, Makas Medina gives the renter a full discount. The default rule of, like, the Svina rule of, like, who's in default would say the renter has to pay in full because maybe a different renter wouldn't have run away. And as a compromise, we say Yachloku. In the Ravan himself, you get this sense that the Makas Medina, when it affects both parties equally, results in a Yachloku. And this whole analysis of Shema, Ilulo Sacharta Besi, Shema Yasokhra Ma'acher, Meosan Shlonigzar Alem Galus, that's just a way at arriving at the idea that the Makas Medina hit them both evenly, or neither of them, and that's why they should split it. Do you guys see that really important difference between the mechanics of the Ravan and the mechanics of the Maram? Anybody?
Isn't he making my point?
Wait, before we get to whether he's making your point, Cole, you got to take us back into a rabbit hole. Not a bad rabbit hole, but a rabbit hole.
Bigger rabbits now.
Does anybody see the difference between the two different shitos here, the Ravan shita and the Mordechai and the Maram's interpretation of it? So again, Donnie, you see it or no? No. So if you read the Ravan, what's the principle at work here to get to Yachloku?
Allocation of loss, meaning without anybody to blame.
Right, there's no hefset. The Makas Medina is chal on both of them. There's no reason to pin it more on the balabayas and on the tenant. The haraya, it's not all the balabayas because maybe a different tenant would have stayed. So you split it, right, Gabe? But when you look at the Maram's version, he says tainas Reuven, tainas Brura. Lefisha Makas Medina he, meaning based off Makas Medina, Reuven should get a full discount. He shouldn't have to pay at all for the time that he was away. But despite that, Afal Pichain, right, despite the Makas Medina rule, Yachloku Ahefsid. Why should they split it? Because maybe a different Jew would have stayed in the house and not run away. Right? And since that's a real concern, Yachloku. So the setup in the Maram sets it up as a clash between two principles. It's a clash between the Makas Medina rule, which would give the tenant a full discount, and this other thing, which I assume is the default rule, right? The tenant's the one who ran away, which would make the tenant liable. And so he comes at a middle ground compromise of Yachloku. And I'm just pointing out that even though he's drawing from the tshuva of the Ravan, It's a very different way of arriving at the same conclusion. The Ravon's Yachloku is based off Ha-Hefzid al-Shneim, right? And you might say, and even if you read the Gemara on Kufvav as saying that the full Hefzid is on the Balabayas, no, that case is different because in our case, the Hefzid al-Shneim, because maybe he could have rented it out to somebody else. That's the Ravon's argument. For the Maram, it's Yachloku based off the clash between the Makas Medina principle and what I take to be an application of the Mima Ake principle. Any just thoughts on that, Diak? Does everybody see that? It's a really important difference. Gabe?
Yeah, I think it's an important distinction. I'm a little bit, like, the Maram's calculus seems, like, a little bit arbitrary. He's doing some kind of, like, post-facto risk analysis of, like, what the risk should have been, or it's a decision from some kind of suffix or probability, but not one which is like Meikar Hadin a split, and the Ravon thinks Meikar Hadin we should split the loss across two parties.
Exactly. Yeah.
Math.
What's that, Gabe?
Maram's math is just kind of weird.
Yeah. It's weird that he arrives at that result. It's also weird that he's getting this from the Ravon, right? He says this is mitzafnas paneach psak halacha kasher timsa sham, but when you're ma'ayin sham, you see it's really different, right? I think he really misunderstood the conceptual basis of the Ravon's conclusion here. It's really, you know. What's that?
Or he just took the psak halacha.
Right. He's saying this is the upshot, but he slights it. He slightly changes it. Afal pichen yachloku ahefsid, right? Meaning, despite makas medina, it's yachloku. And for the Ravon, it's because it's makas medina, it's yachloku. So it's really kind of a surprising shift in analysis. I just want to go back to the point that Gabe made in summarizing the Rav Asher Weiss tshuva with the Malamed case. Remember, the Mordechai seemed to say... that if you have a Malamed, you promised him a schar for the year and he can't teach because of Makas Medina, you still got to pay him in full. That was the Mordechai, that seemed to be how the Ramah took it in Simon Shin Chavalef. Malamed Shigazar Moshe Shal Yilmud Ha Makas Medina, Kol HaHefzid Al Balabayas. But the Sma in Shin Chavalef Vav is very upset by this, right? And actually, he explicitly says that this contradicts the rule of Almi Hayalahasnos and the Motzi always losing, right? If the Motzi always loses, then you would think that the Malamed should lose, right? The Malamed is the one who has to justify being compensated. So why does Makas Medina suddenly give the Malamed everything? And also remember, the Malamed, let's just think for a second. It's interesting that normally, the rule in Makas Medina in the sugya of Kufvav and Kuf Gimel in Bav Mitzia is that the Baal, well, I guess you're right, the Baal, it's true that in both cases, the Baal Habayis loses, right, in the Makas Medina rule. So in the Malamed case, the Baal Habayis loses, in the Sada case, in the Chocher case, the Baal Hasada loses. But the interesting thing is that the Socher Maskir, did I get that right? Is inverted, because the poel is the Malamed is considered to be the maskir. He's renting out his labor to the balabayas, right? You're socher poelim, and in the landlord chocher case, the balabayas is leasing out his property, which makes him the maskir, right? And the chocher is the socher. So the interesting thing is that, did I get this right? Yes. Even though, if you look at it from the perspective of the Baal HaBayis, in both cases the Baal HaBayis is losing, but if you look at both cases through the lens of who's the maskir and who's the sachir, it seems to come out that the Baal, in the landlord case, the Baal HaBayis is the maskir, right? He's machkir his sadeh to the worker, to the sharecropper. And then in the kuvav, it's the maskir who's losing. in the Mordechai's case, it's the socher who's losing. So I guess it just depends. What's the what are the bedrock halachic categories that are relevant for drawing the analogy? Is it balabayis to balabayis, or is it maskir to maskir? So if it's balabayis, it all works out nicely. But if the primitive the fundamental categories are maskir sachir, then you get an inverted application, which is very strange. So for example, if you're thinking about who's the motzi, the poel, the melamed's the motzi, because he's trying to justify his compensation, and the Baal HaSadeh is the motzi, right? Because he's trying to justify collecting his rent. And then you get that in the Chocher case, the motzi loses, but in the Melamed case, the motzi wins, which is the puzzle. And that's what the Sma and Shin Chavav Aleph is worried about. So he quotes the Mordechai, that the Melamed gets everything in Makas Medina. And then he says, V'svara zu lo matzino b'shum makom. Adarabba, mistaver lomer. Kivan de Makas Medina hi. Hamaskir v'hasocher shavin bedavar. V'ein lomar de mazalo de shum echad garam. This is very interesting. So he says, the core idea of Makas Medina is that neither party's mazal is at work. So both parties are in equipoise. Or equipoise. Where's Adam? Where Adam signed off. Oh no. Okay. V'ein lomar de mazal shum echad garam. And then he's like a little open-minded about what happens because of there being an equal position. Are we nachzor lichlalenu amotze mechaveru al varaya? Or do we say a hefsed yal shneihem? But you see, I think he agrees with the Ravan's idea that the main point of Makas Medina is to say that everybody's in equal position, the loss should be shared. He's a little on the fence about whether shared loss means shared, or it means apply the rule of motze mechaveru al varaya. But in principle, he's on board with the Ravan that kivan de makas medina hi amaskir vasocher shavin bedavar ve'ein lomar de mazal shalachem yam garam. Okay? Now here's another point. He says, gam bimelamed zesh shegazar hamoshel shelo lelamed yachloku. We should probably just split it. And he appeals to the boat case where we either say yachloku in the stam scenario, we say yachloku, and in the zu ze scenario, we say yad hamuchzak al halyona, right? So he basically says we should apply one of those two rules here, but what logical basis can there be for the Mordechai ruling that the melame takes all? He says, "Demashma afilu madayin aschiras biyadu tzarich l'shalim la melamed." And you think that's just like an irrational decision from the Mordechai. So he actually just mikach hakushya rejects that reading of the Mordechai that suggests that the melamed takes all. And he does a lot of finessing here to try to say, "Gam lo kasa viyehe ahefsed al bala bayis behe hayadia da have mashma hefsed hayadua da hainu kol ahefsed." He wants to reinterpret the Mordechai to mean that when it says hafsid al-bala bayis, it means it should be yachloku, like the Sfina case. So I think in the end of the day, the maskanas of the Sma is in line with the idea of the Ravan. The halachic rule for Makas Medina is a clean yachloku, which I think makes a lot of sense. I just want to wrap up today's discussion by quickly pointing you to two other important points. Yeah. Make sure I have this right. So I thought this Taz And Simon Shinlamed Dalet is very good. I'll reference this in Nesivis and I'll mention the Taz. So one point about the Melamed case is the Nesivis and Shinlamed Dalet Aleph. Not really so important for our purposes, but something interesting to know is that he also thinks... Two things are important about this Nesivis. Look how he phrases his objection to the Mordechai's ruling. He says, this is the Nesivis and Shinlamed Dalet Aleph. Uve'emes hadin hu l'chora tamua ma'od. Why in the world should the Melamed take all in the case of Makas Medina? Mehecha tesi ya adif Makas Medina mi'ilu israme ha'ones bebal habayis to have a pseida de poel. He's directly asking, right? He's implicitly referencing three different rules, right? He's saying there's the pseida de poelim rule that the motzi always loses. There's the who's the locus of the ones idea, and then there's makas medina. And he says we know that the pseida de poelim rule overrides the locus of the ones rule. He says even if it's isrami ones bebal habayis, we still say pseida de poel. Right? So if there's an ones that inheres in the Baal HaBayis and that becomes Pseida de Poel because he's the motzi and therefore should have made a Tanai, Kol Shekein V'Kal V'Chomer, when it's a Makas Medina, that makes us view it not as an ones of the Baal HaBayis. The Ha'achanami, a Baal HaBayis lo Pasha Midi, the Havak Ilu Shneem Einon Yodin Meha Ones. The Adraba, Motzinu Shem Makas Medina, Hu Megarea Koach HaPoel. If anything, Makas Medina should weaken the Poel's position. And he cites the Chachiros example. So this leads the Nesivis to reject the straightforward reading of the Mordechai. And he says, the Mordechai's reading is not really grounded in principles of Schiros Poelim. Maybe it has to do with the nature of being a Melamed. That a Melamed's not really hired to teach. It's more of like a Hischaivus for Schar Batala. And since it's a Hischaivus for Schar Batala, then you still have to pay it out in Ones. Because you're not paying for the service, you're paying for the Schar Batala. It says here, Gzeras HaMoshel, Nir Desfile, Kivin the Melamed, Aser Lito Schar Limud, Rak Schar Shimor, Gzeras HaMoshel, Ino Ones Al HaShimor, Rak Al HaLimud, We don't need to get into the details of his theory, but what's important for us is just two things. A, he appeals to Pseida de Poelim to undercut the Mordechai's ruling, and B, he thinks that Lamaskana, the Mordechai, you couldn't apply, Makas Medina would not override the principle of Pseida de Poelim. If anything, Makas Medina is a reason why the Poel should not be paid in full. And so he comes up with this other idea that has to do with Schar Batala, Schar Shimor, which is what explains why the Melamed gets paid. I just want to make one other point. The Taz in Shin Lamed Dalet Sif Aleph here quotes this ruling that's, you know, a variation of the case that we saw in the Ravan. Echad shehaya masker bayis lechavero v'nishavesh shinoi avir bar minin shetzvichen akol levroach, right? I guess there's some air pollution or some pandemic of a sort that everyone has to leave town. Nir apashet shehahefzit shel bala bayis. He thinks the landlord loses. Again, contra the Ravan. Chada dezehav makas medina di efshar lader rivatim shabir. Okay, for whatever reason, he just assumes that the makas medina affects the batim more than the tenants. But here's the important point. He says the landlord loses. V'o de'al kolponim havesham ones al makas dever. V'kivan de'bal habayis v'socher shnehem lo yadu. Have ha'hefzid al hamotzi. Shehu bal habayis shehu amaskir. Kol zeh nearly pashut. So what's fascinating is that he just directly applies the Pseida de Poelim, Pseida de Motzi rule when both parties are in equipos. Shneem lo yadu, then it's always the hefzid of the Motzi, which is the Baal HaBayis. So I think this is a really clever idea.
It's one route.
it's one route, and what's, I think it's a way of reducing.
It's no way to, there's no way to prove it's wrong.
Correct.
You have to assume that it doesn't matter really where the money is, but that's a judgment call. There's no text.
Right. That. Okay, fine. But I think it's one way of saying that in Macas, in Macas Medina, when no one's at fault.
Nothing new here.
Right.
It's what, just we have, just the difference between the Balabai's pole analogy isn't the one because the money's in a different place when the, it's
exactly, exactly. The Balabai's is reversed. Right. From the polar relationship, but I think it's a nice way of saying that in Macas, when it's a Macas Medina, no one's at fault, so we just fall back on our pseudo de poel and pseudo de mozi rule, which is why the landlord loses, right? Because he's the mozi, he's the one who has to justify being paid. And so now it's a little bit mysterious, why do we default on this rule rather than the schiros liyome memkar he rule,
background empirical assumptions about when stuff gets paid out.
Yeah, it could be, but it,
I think you're gonna have to say this.
Yeah, but why this rule and not the schiros liyome rule? Right, I think that's a bit of an open question, right?
The term, I mean, the idea is a rental agreement. The default is there's a rental agreement that you're, that the, where you, you know, pay at the end or something like that.
Yeah, no, for sure. Yeah, I think so. Or justified being, you have to justify your entitlement to be paid without really providing a usable good, right? Because the house, yeah, like, is no longer habitable.
This kind of, again, I don't have an answer for it, except that this kind of answer, it'll all boil down to that rush that we saw, and then it's like 9:45. It'll boil down to that rush that we saw that said, like, payment in advance is a kind of risk assumption.
Right.
Now that's a thought.
Correct.
But it's a thought.
Correct. So I think, again, just to recap what I want you to take away from the Taz, it's interesting, he seems to think that, you know, one way of understanding Macas Medina is just as an application of the pseudo de poelim rule. And I think that, you know, it's a nice way of trying to consider what the default is and whether Macas Medina is just an application of one of those more fundamental principles that we've seen until now, like this pseudo de poelim rule, or whether it's overriding it in some way. We've seen different formulations. I think the Taz is in the camp of thinking it might just be an application of the pseudo de poelim rule. We're going to stop here. Let's do our last chabura on Tuesday, where I think what we should just discuss is one other issue in Macas Medina, which is the Maram Padua discussion, which raises this issue of prospective, like forward versus backwards. Like, there's a difference between whether Macas Medina gives you a patur from stuff going forward or just from stuff like looking backwards. So why don't we discuss the Maram Padua, and you'll see there's like a Darkei Moshe and a Rama who discuss it on Tuesday, and that'll be a wrap. All right. Yasher Koach, everyone. All right.
Anybody with further questions about my crusade for basic decency, put them on the WhatsApp.
That's right. We could have a separate day to discuss your article, Cole.
Yeah, we could have a Hashkafish here.
We should have Kol Day and then Potok Day.
Potok Day. Exactly. We could have a Chabura summer reading group.
We should. I just started, you can see I've finished The Chosen, and here I got my
The Promise.
God, I don't know why they have.
Today I started My Name is Asher Lev.
You know, he's good. His prose is like a little plotting and
genius prose stylist, but
right. But I mean the themes that he explores, the great themes, yeah. And
they're excellent.
I mean, I love first of all, I love like his description of YU, you know, Hirsch College.
It's been a while since I read The Chosen, and I certainly didn't look at The Chosen. It was a mistake. I should have walked around with a copy of The Chosen, like trying to find.
Who's
this?
You
based on?
Right, which figure are you? I love this opening scene in The Promise where they're gambling at the carnival, and they're. Do you remember this?
I'm not even sure I finished the premise.
It's so precious. The opening chapter is like they're gambling at this carnival. He, his girlfriend, and her niece, and then girlfriend's nephew.
Ruvain or Danny?
It's Ruvain with Rachel and Michael. Michael's the nephew. And they're like, you know, Ruvain's upset that they're there. It's like, it's a carnival. Why are we here? It's just like so low and like the riffraff. And finally they stumble across this like gambling booth where you have to keep like putting in more money and for a chance to win. You like roll die and these balls fall into little holes and you tally the numbers and there's a card that tells you. And basically they're losing. And then this old guy comes over and he talks to them in Yiddish. He's like, oh, this is my booth. Don't worry. You'll win. You know, it's like, don't worry, you'll win. And Potok describes it like, oh, he spoke Yiddish. And he asked about Williamsburg and the Chassidim in Williamsburg. He's like, I felt so warm towards him and so secure. I'm like, yeah, let's do this. And then to make a long story short, this guy basically is like a hustling Jew who rips them off. And he lies about what the numbers are. Like, he quickly pulls the ball out of the holes and makes up the count so that you always lose. And they end up losing all their money to this guy. But he has this, like, brilliant portrayal of, like, how you're disarmed by the guy's Yiddish. And he's a landsman. He starts talking about Europe and Brooklyn. And you feel so comfortable and you, like, move forward. And then it turns out that the guy was just a cheater. I mean, I thought that was really a beautiful scene. So...
Interesting you say beautiful, but
all right, I gotta go, folks. Yeah. Talk to you.
All right, take care, everyone.